Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Don't sweat the technique. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Cobos in Edo, presented by Corona Premier.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Thank you to Cobos. Thank you to Corona Premier for having us out at Cobos today. This is your spot. This is your spot. Watch all your college basketball opening day just around the corner. In fact, keep from L.A. Just in case you guys forgot or don't know, the world champs kick off the season at 5 o'clock in the morning. Go Blue. Appreciate the heads up, Keith from LA. I'll make sure not to watch that. Boston the Gloss coming up at 6 o'clock, top of the hour. They'll have Daniel Ewing joining them in studio. Former Dookie, right?
Indeed. Daniel Ewing, local former Dookie. Kid. Yeah, he went to high school here at – did he go to Strake?
I don't think he went to Strake.
I think he went to Strake, and then he went to Duke, yeah.
He went to Duke. Let's see where he went to high school. He played in the league, too, didn't he? Willeridge.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Willeridge. Okay, he played for the Clippers. They played for a couple teams.
I mean, he had a few years with the Clippers. But, yeah, I know him from Duke the most. And he was from Houston. Yeah, Willeridge for Daniel Ewing. So Daniel Ewing joining them in studio right at the Rip. So make sure you're tuning in for that, all your college basketball talk. And then they're going to have the best draft expert in the NFL on with them at 7 o'clock. Perennial draft powerhouse.
Your guy or my guy?
Lance Zierlein will be on with them at 7 o'clock.
Not your guy.
Top of the hour. I didn't say he was my guy. He was the best.
Okay.
He said he was the best. Plus, I'm the boss and the gloss are my people.
Yeah, so you're homing it up. Yeah, I got it.
Definitely. Yeah. What is it? Posturing?
Yeah,
posturing for the boss and the gloss.
You're trying to do film study like you're Jeremy Branham?
No.
Make everybody think that you know ball?
Posturing. All right, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. We'll get to the Altuve conversation in a moment. It's a time to move Altuve to second. But Philip wants to talk about Cam Smith. Philip, you're in the Hive. What's up?
Hey, guys. I was just thinking about listening to you guys discussing Cam Smith, and the one thing I always have fear about is a cautionary tale named Evan Carter, who took the world by storm coming up from the, you know, as a rookie with the Rangers and hitting the playoffs, but he only had maybe 100 plate appearances above Double A prior to them calling him up, and he took the world by storm because there was no book on him, and I doubt MLB scouts are really focused on a bunch of Double A guys worried about what they're doing and how to pitch to them. And sure enough, you give them one offseason, and all of a sudden, you know, the pitchers know how to get to him, and he struggles the next year. So my fear with rushing Cam Smith is stunning his development in a similar way. And every player is a little bit different, granted. So that's just kind of my thinking, because everybody was on the Evan Carter train when he was on that playoff run, and all of a sudden, he's just not the same player all of a sudden. So I do think he's performed better at the lower levels than Carter. I mean, I think Carter was like an 800 OPS guy in Double A, which tells you, you know, you wouldn't expect that, you know, at the big leagues, the kind of success he had. But Cam Smith's exposure at Double A is a lot less than what Carter's was, too. But same concept, though. The idea is if you call him up early in the year, give a full season to scout him, by playoff time, maybe pitchers have figured him out and he's not as much help. Whereas you call him up mid-year, maybe he carries you all the way through the playoffs. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Philip. I always appreciate your insight. I think that it's one of those deals where, yeah, that's one way to look at it. But I think that the other way to look at it is, you know, if he's good, he's going to be good. He's going to, and no matter what scouting report is, that he'll be able to figure it out. And to me, it just becomes how good is the team? And in this case, how good is the outfield? And if you have questions about the outfield, then that's the reason why you would start him at the big league level, regardless of anything else, because there's a position of need. There might be positions of need, but you need some guys that can swing the bat as well as play defense. And right now there are question marks in that outfield, with Altuve a question mark defensively, but at least you know what you're going to get from him offensively. So that would be my way of thinking about this on the flip side of it, to look at it a little bit differently than you. I'm not worried about the playoffs till they get there. I'm worried about this team in the regular season having the offensive output in the outfield.
Yeah, I think Phillips' points are good.
They're valid, yeah.
I'm trying to selectively pick the word I want to use. I think you should be aware of Cam Smith's development. I do think that Cam Smith's development for the first few months of the regular season should be the primary focus over, is his bat better than Chaz McCormick? Because you trade for a Cam Smith in a huge trade that involved Kyle Tucker, you're trying to get the best version of Cam Smith. You're trying to make sure that he is developed to the point where he can become a really good major league player. I'm not rushing him to the bigs because he's a better bat than, you know, Chaz or Ben Gamble or whoever you're throwing him out there. I need to do right by the kid. I need to make sure that I get the absolute best from Cam Smith before I call him up. Now, I think he's a little harsh on Evan Carter, and Carter had way more minor league experience than he said. Now, he didn't have tons of experience, like above the A-ball level, and I also think he was crushed by injuries last year. I think Evan Carter is going to be pretty solid for the Rangers going forward. But to his point, I do agree with that the development of Cam Smith should be the focal point over anything else for a while.
I don't disagree. I brought this up. I brought this up, I think, a week or two ago. But my biggest thing is that I don't want it to be too much for him, and then suddenly he gets off to a Bregman-esque start to his major league career, but because he's so young and he had so little experience, that it affects him like for the rest, you know, for a good portion of his career. Some guys it might affect him for the rest of his career, and that would be a very, very bad thing. But that's where I have to lean on Dana Brown. I have to lean on the fact that he has kind of pushed a lot of young players through the Braves system to see, and you get the read on the player as well as the ability to understand this kid can handle it, right? His disposition, you know, his mentality, his temperament, all says to me, along with his ability, I don't think it's going to be too much for him. But if you know that you've got a volatile kid, or you get a kid that's really emotional, then it's a different conversation.
I guess I would wonder, how would you know that? Like,
I think a lot of it is, you hear it a lot already from the players, from the media, from the manager, from when Joe Espada speaks about him, when Dana Brown speaks about him, when some of the other players speak about him. It's like he's got a maturity level above his years.
Yeah.
Like he's able to joke with the guys, but at the same time, he can compartmentalize that and still be who you need him to be when he's on the field, when he's in a high-pressure situation, when he's talking to guys about the game, so that you can get a good understanding of it.
That's why I'm riding the fence about it, because if he is that guy and he's up on opening day and he's just that guy, awesome. But then I totally understand where Phillip is coming from, where it's like, man, he's played 5 games above high A ball. He's had 19 plate appearances above high A ball, and the focal point should be about the development, not really the Astros' win total in the first 2 months of the year. A texture, this is exactly what I've been afraid of with Jeremy Pena, and while he'll never get back to his rookie season. See, Jeremy Pena was never really known for his bat. He was more of a defensive guy coming up. And Jeremy Pena's rookie year has been very similar to his last 2 years. You're probably magnifying what he did in the postseason to really cloud your judgment on what he did his first year in the bigs. His first year, OPS Plus, it's easy to understand, was 102 OPS Plus his rookie year. His second year was 95. Last year was 100. Like, he's been pretty much consistent. The same hitter.
Yep.
For his entire career. Now, he had more pop in his rookie year, 22 homers, but he had 15 last year. I think he's been pretty much who Jeremy Pena is. Now, he's had a big
spring.
Quietly,
I was just going to say, he's had a really good spring. So, excuse me, if there's anybody that you might hold out hope that he might be able to take it a step up this year that we're not talking about, it could be Jeremy Pena.
Yeah. So, is it time to move Jose Altuve to second base? And I'm not freaking out about some play he did not make at the wall in left field. Jeez. Like, that play happens to everybody. Like, he mistimed his jump. It's not because he's too short. The reason that I'm bringing this up is because, okay, Cam Smith seems like he might be an option to start in right field for the Houston Astros. Zach DiZinzo has had a really good spring training as well. And not that it's an ideal situation where you have a couple of corner infielders that are playing your corner outfield spots at a high level of games. But if they're trying to get Zach DiCenzo into the lineup, if they're trying to get Cam Smith into the lineup, how do you do that without moving Jose Altuve to second base again?
It's a good question, because when we were talking about this at the start of the spring, I said DiCenzo's a guy that I'd keep an eye on. He's come in and even in better shape. He seems to be stronger, and he seems to be a guy that no matter where he plays defensively, we know he can hit. And so if you need bats, like when I kept saying they needed an extra bat in the outfield, there was a guy that I thought they should keep an eye on. Now, it's a good problem to have, at least from the standpoint of if you do move Altuve back, there was nothing solidified that any one of the guys that we've been talking about was going to be the starting second baseman on opening day. So there's nothing lost by you tried Altuve in the outfield. You found out that, hey, in a pinch or if you ever need him, he could probably play the outfield. But his ideal position is second base. He's played it his whole life. And if he's got to go back there, I don't think anybody should see it as a problem except for the fact that he has taken steps back defensively at this stage in his career. But overall, if you move him back and that means you have another bat in the outfield, then, you know, DiCenzo playing the outfield versus Altuve playing the outfield is kind of a wash to me defensively. And maybe DiCenzo has a better arm, and he's
should.
And so I think that from that standpoint, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I do think it lessens your defense, and there's a reason they wanted Altuve in left field was because of the defense. And I know that Espada has said he doesn't want to bounce Altuve left field, second base, left field, second base. While Dana Brown has also said that they love the flexibility it gives them with the options of him being able to play both positions. I wonder if there's a platoon here. Whenever you have your ground ball pitchers, that Dubon can play second. Whenever you have your Blancos and your Eric Geddes pitching, maybe your Wesneskis, then Altuve can play second base and DiCenzo can play left field because fly ball guys stack your best offense out there. I'm wondering if that could be the play for Joe Espada, but he would also have to backtrack his words of bouncing Altuve around. I really don't see another way to do it. If you're trying to get DiCenzo in the lineup, which I don't know if they're trying to do, if you're trying to get Cam Smith in the lineup, which I don't know that they're going to try to do yet,
right,
how else do you do it without Altuve playing second base and you're healthy? There is no other way.
There's one other option to consider, but I think...
What is that?
That's DiCenzo at second base.
No, you would play DiCenzo at third and move Esoc to second first. But I also don't think that's realistic.
I don't think it is either, but I think that that's another scenario, is that DiCenzo would be somewhere on the infield so that you didn't have to do the others. So I think that's a possibility. Is it a probability? No, I don't think so. Do I like that idea? No, I don't think so, especially because of the fact, like you just mentioned again, that we have ground ball pitchers. We have ground ball pitchers. The infield's going to be – you upgraded first base for a reason, right? Not just offensively. You got a three-time Gold Glove first baseman. You know the importance of defense, right? So I just don't know that, especially with Paredes playing as much as he's played at third base. Now we're suddenly going to move him to second base. And we're going to play musical infielders as well as musical outfielders. I don't like that.
Yeah, I read in Chandler Rome's piece, I think it was, in The Athletic today, where they were talking about positional flexibility and guys moving around the diamonds. And I believe it was in his article where they're like, yeah, MLB scouts don't think that Paredes can handle second base, like with lateral quickness, stuff like that. Like, yeah, they kind of doubt his options at second. So that's kind of why I poo-pooed that, reading that info.
And he's got, not that he's not hasn't always been stocky,
yeah,
but he looks extremely like bulked up too.
Yeah, he's got a Branham build.
Yeah, I just don't think that like he's going to be rangy at second base.
Yeah, he's built like me. There's no doubt about that. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRNP listener line. Keith, you're in the Hive. Keith, what's up?
Hey guys, love the baseball chatter. Personally, just my opinion, I think you start Cam Smith, DiCenzo, Wisniewski, all in the minors, and I think you bring in some potential veteran pieces. You know how I like veteran pieces across all sports. What do you guys think, hear me out, of a potential Patrick Corbin or Kyle Gibson at the fifth starting pitcher spot, or a David Peralta, or bring home Robbie Grossman into left field? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it's a terrible idea.
Awful. Awful, the has-beens and the retreaded and the typical Keith suggestions, I'm not going with.
Corbin Martin was in the Grinke trade, I want to say. What did Martin, J.B. Paskowskis?
I think that's right. Because he actually pitched decently for the Astros, and they were like, could he be a guy that could be a guy in your rotation for years? And I believe he was in that trade.
Who was the infielder that played with Arizona and then was with Seattle last year? He was like the best major leaguer in that trade. I forget his name. He was a corner infielder.
Not the guy that hit the home run in the Verlander no-hitter game?
No, you're thinking Toro.
Yeah, Toro, who's somewhere else now.
No, this guy never played a big league game with the Astros, but it was Grinke. The Astros got Grinke. They traded Corbin Martin, Paskowskis, Seth Beer, and there was an infielder who, like, no one thought of, and it turned out that infielder, not that he's been good, but that infielder has been the best big leaguer. He played with the Mariners last year. I forget his
name. Rojas? I know you're talking
is
about.
It Rojas?
He's got pop. Rojas.
Josh Rojas?
He's got some pop. Because the Red Sox, they got a guy from the Astros, too, that was
he was in the
Vasquez
trade.
Good outfielder.
Yeah, Willier Abreu. He was in the Vasquez trade. Is Brendan Rodgers not going to be there at second base? He's fighting.
He's in the mix.
He's fighting. All right, 713-780-ESPN. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Reed Geddes, the all-time assist leader in Houston Cougar basketball history. He'll join us to talk about the Cougs in the NCAA tournament bracket next. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Being a homeowner comes with a lot of responsibility and cost. It's the nature of the business. Ownwell is here to help you with both of those things. Let them take a little off your plate, but also save you money. A lot of homeowners are overpaying on property tax, and it shouldn't be you. Head to ownwell.com and sign up in less than 3 minutes to get their experts fighting for you. Their cutting-edge technology can start with saving you money with no upfront cost. Can't beat that. Put your property tax savings back in your pocket. Reinvest it. Take the family on a vacation, your spouse to a nice dinner. Ownwell handles it all from start to finish and delivers top results. Again, no upfront cost. Only pay if you save. You can't beat that. Ownwell levels the playing field, eliminates the concern of paying too much on property tax for the everyday home and property owner like you and me. 86% of Ownwell's customers receive a reduction, with the average customer saving over $1,100. Why wouldn't you sign up? And the deadline to protest is May 15th, so don't run out of time. Save money on your property taxes with Ownwell. Sign up in less than 3 minutes and start your protest today at ownwell.com. That's O-W-N-W-E-L-L.com.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to the Killer Bees, broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Cobos in Edo, presented by Corona Premier.
Let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line, being joined by the great Reed Geddes, Five Slamma Gemma. Of course, three Final Fours at his time at the University of Houston. 740 career assists, the all-time U of H leader. That's a lot of jump shots for you, Blanker. 740 assists? 740? It's a lot of them. Reed, thank you for taking a few minutes and joining the Killer Bees. Let's start with the Big 12 tournament. Houston winning the three games in 3 days, Colorado, then the semifinals beat BYU, and then Arizona in the championship game. What would you think of the Cougars' time in Kansas City and then eventually winning the Big 12 title?
All I can see is Juwan Roberts driving baseline and collapsing with a sprained ankle. You know, it's the craziest thing. Look, here's an unpopular take. First of all, the atmosphere in Kansas City is second to none. If you've never been there, you need to do it. The Power and Light District, it's awesome. But can you imagine, think about an NFL team going to week 18. They already have the seeding locked up. They're in the playoffs. They can't do anything but get guys injured. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, well, if they're keeping score, we're trying to win. Like, holy cow, how many times have we been down this road? I swear I would go and I would look at players 6 through 11, and I'd say, fellas, play your butts off. We're all pulling for you. I just wouldn't risk it. Having said that, I'm glad we only had one minor injury. I hope it's minor. But, man, I just, with what we've been through with Sasser and Jamal and Tremont Mark and JoJo, it's like, man, I held my breath all weekend.
Reed, it's interesting because you are the probably one of the best to talk about the overall long runs of Cougar basketball. And I'm interested in your thoughts on, you know, how down this program was and where this program was, and then maybe the thoughts that pop into your head like it did mine of, will this program ever get back to prominence? And then, you know, not too much longer after that, to see what Kelvin's been able to do and then maintain it and continue to build it and grow with it. How impressed have you been with what Kelvin's been able to do there?
Yeah, you run out of adjectives. It's one of those things that all of the older fans always talk about, you know, the golden era of Cougar basketball. And I'm like, are you nuts? I mean, that was three great years. This is the golden era. You know, the job was so run down that as it became open, I'd have friends call and say, hey, you know, man, can you call the AD or can you help me get that job? And my reaction was always the same, like, really? Are you sure? It's a really tough job. And what Kelvin has done, I mean, this is what, third year in a row, number one seed, fourth year in a row, 30 wins. It is absolutely, it's one of the most phenomenal stories I've ever seen in college basketball. The ability to take less and do more. The player development is off the charts. And now suddenly we're entering a new era where we're not dealing with less. We're dealing with more. You know, with a number one recruiting class coming in on the back end of this season, I can't even put into words what Kelvin and Qantas and Hollis and, you know, what they built it's mind-blowing to me. I could not, you know what's funny is I sat next to Kelvin one night. Kelvin and I were at an alumni event. And I told him I've never been more proud of our program ever as a Cougar than last year watching them battle Duke without JoJo, without Arsenault, with Jamal Shedd on the sidelines. And we've got, with all due respect, we've got a lineup on the floor that has no business being on the floor with Duke. And with a minute, I think, 10 to go, we're one shot away from it.
Yeah,
that's the most amazing culture I've ever seen in my life.
The culture makes you proud to be an alum. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, they were three away from tying it late in the game without Jamal Shedd for the final 30 minutes of that game. Reed Geddes joining us on the HR&P guest line. Played with Houston during Phi Slammajama. Went to three Final Fours. Leads the program all time in assists. Whenever you saw the draw, what'd you think of it? SIU Edwardsville in round one, Gonzaga, Georgia, winner of that one if the Cougars are lucky enough to advance in the second round. And then you see a couple of schools, the bottom half of the bracket, should the Cougars have good fortune to advance to the second weekend. Not a far drive from Purdue, not a far drive from Kentucky. Tennessee at the bottom of that bracket. What'd you think of the Midwest region?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Jeremy. Whenever I look at brackets, you know, the first game, you fight for a number one or number two seed for that first game. And then from then on, you're going to play really good teams. You know, I think Gonzaga, I don't know anything about Georgia, but I know Gonzaga is not very good this year. They are not ranked. They had a conference championship game in the West Coast Conference against St. Mary's. And combined, the two teams went 1 for 31 from the three-point line. Gonzaga won going 1 for 16 or 1 for 15, and St. Mary's was 0 for 15. Gonzaga is not very deep, so I've got to think that Georgia wins that game after how rugged the SEC was. But I agree with you. I'm sitting here and I'm staring at Purdue, Kentucky, and Tennessee, and, man, if we play Tennessee in the Elite Eight, that game may be 38 to 36.
Reed, I'm curious because, again, tapping into your resources of everything that you've done with college basketball playing and coaching and everything else, looking at the state of college basketball and college sports in general right now, did you ever think we were going to get to a point where the transfer portal is what it is, NIL the way it is, and then how sustainable of a model is this? You hear now Coach Alford is starting to come out and say, you know, that is it too much that the players are getting paid? We knew the coaches used to jump ship for bigger, better deals. But now anybody can jump ship multiple times in a career, and it's who can write them the biggest check in a lot of cases. Your thoughts on all of that?
You know, it's interesting. It's all a matter of perspective, right? Tony Bennett's not competing in this new environment, and suddenly it's the worst system, and it's not sustainable. And Alford's struggling, and struggling at Nevada, or not, you know, perhaps has underachieved the last couple of years. Suddenly the system doesn't work. Man, I think Kelvin and his crew thinks it's working really well. You know, I think Duke thinks it's working really well. And so you look at it and you think, golly, it just can't be sustainable. And it's gotten so far afield from name, image, and likeness, you know, to where you see, you know, kids are driving Lamborghinis or Ferraris or whatever, and it's like, Not sure that was the intended consequence. So I don't know. You know, I'm not good enough at the finances. I know that the revenue sharing is going to be a big hit for some schools when that goes into effect next year. It's fascinating to me because, you know, for the most part, the Cougars are doing this without a slew of transfers. I think we've lost maybe two kids since the transfer portal, and both of them I think were addition by subtraction. We lost Tremont Mark and Jeremy. What's the kid's name that was Player of the Year and then couldn't even get into the lineup?
Caleb Mills,
Florida State. Yeah, Caleb Mills. You know, so you think about Houston and the success that they've had. They plugged in a Quentin Grimes, plugged in a Milos Uzan. But man, it's not like these schools that are, you know, replacing 7-8 guys every year. So I don't know if it's sustainable, but it sure has changed the paradigm of competitiveness.
Reed Geddes joining us on the HRNP guest line. When you look at this year's Houston team and, you know, the tournament as well as anybody, it can be fickle. You sprained ankle away, a hot shooting team away from seeing your season come to an end. But when you watch this Cougar team, what gives them a chance?
Four guys that can score 20 points on any given night. And we haven't had that, maybe ever. I can't remember the last time we had four guys. I mean, Uzan's development has just been freaking off the charts. And Emmanuel's back to playing the way he was. But then you had LJ and Jaywan. And then the one starter that can't go get you 20 happens to be the Defensive Player of the Year in the Big 12. And then Wilson and Arsenault, you know, I don't know that they can give you 20, but they can give you 15. And we haven't had that. We've been so dependent on one or two guys that can knock down shots. And look, at the end of the day, you look at the offensive and defensive efficiency, and if you're filling out your bracket, you look for teams that are in the top 10 or 15 in both offense and defense. And this year, that's Florida, Duke, and U of H. And it is just, boy, it's heady times. It's hard to take in, you know, changing your thinking that we are very much the hunted, and that's new for us.
It's interesting, Reed, too, because I thought you might lead with defense, but you're right. You've got four guys that can get you 20 on any given night. But I think what makes them a national championship contender is the fact that defense travels, and this team's defense is so disruptive. And no matter what gym you're playing in and how loud the crowd is, this defense is going to be suffocating every single night, no matter if you're making shots or not. That's what I've hung my hat on with this team all year, saying, look, they got, yeah, you can put the ball in the basket and you can win a high-scoring game or a low-scoring game, but I don't know how many teams are ready for the kind of defensive pressure that this team puts on night in, night out.
Yeah, I mean, you can't simulate it. You can't prepare for it, and you can talk about it. And you know, Fran Fraschilla kept saying, and I bet I said it a dozen times this year, when you're watching them play, you swear there's seven of them out on the floor. You know, their ability to double-team, hedge, recover, take away jump shots, you know, contest passing lanes, it is phenomenal. I mean, there's kind of this narrative out there. I'm not sure where it came from, that they're not as good this year defensively. It's like, yeah, they are. They're in the maybe one or two in points allowed per game. They're in the top five in field goal percentage defense. They're really good defensively, and what makes them so good is JoJo Tugler. You talk about a unique skill set. I've never seen a kid that can cover more ground and more space than JoJo Tugler does. And so you talk to opposing coaches, and the toughness of the guards jumps out at you, but, man, every single coach will tell you it's those bigs. It's Javier Francis and JoJo and Jaywan. Those guys are just beasts. So I agree with you. The defense gives you a chance every night, but that, you know, for me, that's what we've said the last three or four or five years. And so what's different about this year's team to me is the ability of some guys to jump up and knock down shots.
Reed, really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes, and I know we'll catch up down the road.
Hey, I listen to you guys every afternoon driving home. I enjoy your show very much. Thanks for calling.
Appreciate it, Reed. He's got good taste in sports radio. He's the all-time assist leader played with five slam a J's, been to three Final Fours, but above all else, he's got really good sports radio taste, Blinker.
He was a good shooter, too, right?
Yeah, he could shoot.
He could stroke it, too, but yeah. I mean, Reed and I don't know if he even remembers, but I had Reed filling in on Rockets broadcast for a season or two, so, and I can remember going to practices when he was running the practices, and Clyde would show up an hour and a half in when we were doing features and things.
Yeah,
so
we don't have to talk about that.
He's great, too.
We don't have to talk. You have good taste in TV broadcaster.
Yeah.
Thanks to Reed for joining us. We're going to step aside for a moment. When we come back, who's going to lead the Astros in home runs this year? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I have great taste on how to spend my weekends, and that's at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. If you're looking to get out of the rat race for the weekend, the hustle and bustle of the job, you're sick of the traffic inside the loop, whatever is causing you stress, I have the best weekend for you. Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Escape the anxiety, escape the stress, and enjoy the relaxing great outdoors. Book your stay at twocreekscrossingresort.com right now. Open green spaces, great wildlife, beautiful, majestic trees, and some of the best fishing in Texas. If you like dropping a line in the water, you're going to want to do it at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Just 90 minutes from Houston, you can escape the city without traveling too far at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. You can hike the 92-acre property. If you enjoy kayaking, do that. They have pickleball courts. You can get down on the pickleball courts if you want. Or how about just hanging out, kicking back, and enjoying a nice drink by the pool? Two Creeks Crossing Resort also loves to take care of their visitors. How about a barbecue cook-off one weekend, a crawfish boil the next? You're always going to have a great time at Two Creeks Crossing. Whether it's glamping, rent one of the cabins, how about the treehouse, or just pull up the RV if you have your own room and board. They have the perfect stay for anyone. Book your weekend escape now at twocreekscrossingresort.com. That's twocreekscrossingresort.com.
ESPN 97.5. I assumed you knew.
We love our Astros in Houston and all across the Lone Star State.
You're listening to the Killer Bees, broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Cobos in Edo, presented by Corona Premier.
This John and Lance, they let us borrow. I asked them. Not really. But it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. You ever heard that saying?
I have heard.
Just throw this crap out there to get clicks.
And like, I couldn't ask that. I'd be met with that hostility. I couldn't ask that kind of guy.
You're right. You probably would have probably set up a small bonfire that turned into a towering inferno when Granato got mad.
This is a bit risky, though, to ask for permission from a mobster. Instead of
one thing if you pick on Lance's audio. It's another thing entirely if you go at John.
Speaking of Lance, Lance will be on with the Boston Gloss at 7. And then the great Daniel Ewing will be on with them as well at 6 o'clock. But, yeah, thank you for the bench for letting us borrow their – well, hopefully letting us borrow their song. We'll hear about it tomorrow if they took exception to this. So who's going to lead the Astros in home run? We played this game last year. I think we all tied or something like that.
Okay.
So random number generator real quick. Age before beauty. So we'll start with you, Blankers. You get 49. Brian has a 58. I have a 94. How about that? I get first pick. Who was second? I missed it.
I think you said I had 58 and Joel had 54?
Right. I had 49.
Oh, 49?
Yeah. So okay. Branham is first.
Well, we know
B-Mac
who you're
is second. And then Blankers. I actually wanted the third pick on this one, but unfortunately I got number one. I guess I'll go Yordan.
Shocker.
Yeah. Wow.
I guess I'll go with Yordan Alvarez. Leave the Astros in home runs.
We're supposed to stand up for this hot take, too?
No.
Yeah actually, take. This one might have been hotter than the last hot take.
Yeah.
I mean, I am a little worried about injuries.
Yeah,
well, I mean, fireworks smoke can be pretty debilitating.
I have a clear top four. I'm curious where this draft goes. So, Brian, you got second. Go ahead.
Yeah, the draft starts now. There's like three guys. Actually, I could argue four guys for this spot, and I'm a little worried about this guy, you know, maybe missing a little bit of time at the beginning of the year, but I'm going to go with Christian Walker. I think all things being equal as far as playing time, he's got the next most home run power. I'll go Christian Walker.
Okay.
I kind of figured you were going to do that, but that's where I was going to go. Yeah, this is where it gets a little interesting because you're right. There's about three guys that can fall into this. Boy, I wish there was a. I'm going to say Isak Paredes. I just. Yiner was so hot and cold.
Oh, I forgot about
power.
That.
I'm gonna say Paredes.
Yeah, okay. Yonder, Paredes, and then Altuve. I thought were kind of that next.
Those were the three.
Yeah.
You know who was my? If I had the fourth pick in this draft, and it went Yordan, Walker, Isak. So if I was drafting again right now, I'm picking Cam Smith.
Maybe
that would be a Cam spicy Smith. Take. That would be very spicy.
I still don't think he hits more home runs than Altuve.
Look, we're not arguing who's going to be the fourth most home run guy, though. Like, the whole point of this is who leads the Astros in home runs. So who has lead the Astros in home run potential? I think it's Yordan. I think the other two guys are up there, Walker and Isak, if Yordan were to have an injury. But what are the chances Altuve leads the team in home runs versus what are the chances Cam Smith leads the team in home runs? I think Cam Smith has more of an avenue to do so than Altuve. Like, I think Altuve's capped out at 25 home runs. If Cam Smith happens to be on the opening day roster, which, again, I'm probably outside looking in. I think there's a 40% chance he makes the opening day roster. But if he does, he easily has the second most raw power in this organization.
Raw power, yes. But I just think to lead the team in his rookie year.
I'm not arguing that he's going to lead the team. I say he has a better chance to lead the team than Altuve would.
I think Altuve could get to 30, but I still don't think it's going to be enough.
Altuve's
got to 31 twice.
Yeah, I think he can
get to 35? But
yeah,
he got the Biggio path?
A complication. But he's gotten to 31 twice, and I would take the Altuve side too, because I get your argument with the, you know, Cam Smith has more raw power than Altuve, no doubt. But the other part of the equation is having the amount of bats it would take.
That's why you'd have to be on opening day. Like,
okay,
Jose Altuve has 0% chance to lead the Astros in home run this year. Cam Smith has 5% chance.
I disagree, because we're talking about a Yordan injury. And if you're talking about that next group, Altuve has a better chance to get 600 at bats than Cam Smith does.
Okay. That's a little bit reachy, I feel like, Brian.
Why?
Because we're talking about leading the team in home runs. And yes, you need volume to do that. But in the path that I drew out, Cam Smith's getting 600 plate appearances. If he's on the opening day roster in right field, that guy's getting enough PAs. He's not going to be called up to be on the team to sit the bench.
No, I agree with you there. If he's actually on the opening day roster,
it would take that.
But I'm arguing the side of there's risk in assuming that. So, like, if you're just asking me after Yordan, who's most likely to lead the home the team in home runs, Cam Smith or Altuve, and I'm getting to factor in all the different variables that go into this, I'm taking into account the likelihood of both guys getting to 600 at-bats.
Yeah, but then you have to also account for the likelihood for Jose Altuve to lead the team in home runs. Like, there is zero chance Jose Altuve leads the Houston Astros in home runs in 2025. Ooh. And albeit the chances of Cam Smith doing it are relatively small, or even very small, I think there's a 5% chance.
See, I don't think you can say zero chance, because God forbid, but if Yordan goes out with something for the year, then I think that there is a legitimate chance that Altuve, because he's in that same cut. Yes, Walker could have a bigger number, but I think there's three guys that could all be in the running to lead the team in home runs.
Altuve would need injuries from Yordan, Walker, and Isak to have any chance.
Well, he's already got possibly the injury from Walker.
And he would still there's thoughts that he's going to be ready for opening day. And he would still have to out-homer Jeremy Peña and Yiner Diaz. If Cam, like, let's say Cam Smith's up on opening day. How many at-bats is Cam Smith getting? 500 at least, right?
Yeah.
At least 500.
He stays there, yeah.
If Cam Smith gets 500 at-bats versus Jose Altuve's 600 at-bats, who's hitting more home runs? Cam Smith's hitting more home runs. Jose Altuve hit 20 last year. He's a year older. Like, it's going to be hard for him to get above the 20 homer mark, much less 25. Like, the chances of Altuve leading the team in home runs, I think it's unrealistic. I don't think that there's any chance for him to do it. Cam Smith's chances are very, very small. Very, very small. But if he starts with the team on opening day and doesn't get injured, he easily has the second most power in this organization. The only thing that's preventing him from doing it is opportunity. But in the path that I am drawing up, he has opportunity.
But in the same way that you're drawing up that path, I think Altuve batting leadoff, and when he gets hot, he kind of goes on a roll, but that he could get enough at-bats, and he's still got enough power that I'm not saying he's going to go 40 bombs or anything like that, but I think it's going to be kind of like all three guys that are all going to be real close to where that's why I wouldn't say zero chance. I think that there's – if in the case that Yordan something catastrophic happens for the season, I think Altuve's in the conversation to have a chance to lead the team in home runs.
What do you think his maximum home run total is, Altuve?
I think it's right about that. I think it's probably –
25?
Maximum, Brian.
25.
Potential. 25 to 27, that was probably where I'd put him at.
See, I think he could get to 30.
He hit 20 last year in 682 plate appearances. Yeah, I feel like a good chunk of them were early, too.
I don't think he could get to 31. Like, he's hit 31 twice, I believe. I don't think he could get to 31 again. I think the scenario where Altuve leads the team in home runs, which is part of what I've been arguing, is definitely factoring an injury to Yordan at minimum, and probably Christian Walker as well.
How's he hitting more than Isak? Altuve had six homers in his last 60 games.
That's not good.
Yeah.
But I just...
Even if you give him 180 game pace, which
seems like if he had
never
done it before,
18 home runs.
And I granted, it's in his past quite a ways, but I just think that in that God-forbidden scenario when Yordan is not factoring in, that I think that it would be of those three guys, so I give him at least a chance.
If Jose Altuve were to hit 30 home runs this year, it's not because of opportunity, it's not because of plate appearances, it's not because of injuries to Yordan, Walker, and Isak, it's because he lobbed a phone call to Barry Bonds.
I felt a joke coming.
Yeah.
It's not a joke. It's sincere.
That, he got the Goldilocks balls.
The Goldilocks balls. Yeah. Remember whenever launch angle was such a big
yes.
thing? No, it wasn't launch angle, guys. It wasn't the launch angle that was leading to the drive and home runs. It was juiced up baseballs. That was leading to the drive. I can't believe
that. Pujols have like two in the first half of the season and then went on a barrage.
I remember reading an Athletic article talking about how launch angle has changed baseball. And I'm like, have you guys never seen Ken Griffey Jr. swing a baseball bat? Like, launch angle is not a new thought, guys. Like, it is not something that has all of a sudden been found and rediscovered, and it's changed the game. But, yeah, I would go Cam over Altuve, assuming they get enough at-bats. Again, I'm not picking Cam Smith to have more homers than Jose Altuve. That's not the conversation. The conversation is which guy has a greater chance to lead the team in homers. I don't see a path for Altuve, and while I concede that the path for Cam Smith is relatively low, I trust the skills, man. I trust the raw power.
The aircraft carrier.
Possessed by Cam Smith. All right, seven. But, again, just to re-rack this, I got Yordan, Brian's got Walker, and Blankers has Isak. We'll keep the same order, so tomorrow will be Brian, Blankers, me, and then we'll see who wins. Lunch bet here or drink bet?
Whichever.
Brian, you call it.
Well, Joel, I mean, Jeremy, you still owe me a drink, so you want to add another one?
Yeah, I'll do it somewhere we have a tab like you did to me.
As long as I get a free one, I don't care.
All right, yeah, we'll do lunch or drink?
I think drink.
Season-long bet, drink? You guys
all right,
are soft.
Well, sounds like you want to do lunch.
It's fine, let's do
say lunch.
It's fine.
Don't put it in us.
Softies. Not you, but
lunch.
Brian's being a little soft. Season-long bet, wants to go drink bet. Yeah,
well,
let's
you
do
put
lunch.
It on me.
We'll do
just
lunch. All right, 713-780-3776. Let's get to our car wreck of the day. What is your car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Cobos on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Give me all you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Thanks again to Corona Premier and Cobos for having us out today. Thank you to Raul for the delicious quesadillas. They were fantastic. And again, this is your spot to watch all your tournament basketball. And, of course, opening day, 10 days away, and Cobos and Raul is going to go all out. So be here on opening day when the Astros kick off of their season. Also, the Boston the Gloss coming up at 6. They're going to have the great, the outstanding, the always good Daniel Ewing, and then also Lance Erline. At 7 o'clock. Car wrecks of the day, 713-780-3776. A lot of people are putting me on car wreck of the day for my Altuve-Cam Smith thing. Didn't Jose Altuve have an injury last year? No, he didn't. He played 150-something games. If Jose Altuve hits 30 or more home runs, you have to retire, Branham. All right, bet. It's crazy to think a kid who has never done it would be able to beat Altuve this year. I didn't say he would have more homers than Altuve. I said he has a better chance to lead the Astros in homers than Altuve. Those are two very different things. All right, car wreck of the day, Blankers. What you got?
I'm going to start out with our own Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. The disaster that was the Journey concert Saturday night, I believe it was during Don't Stop Believin'.
It was.
It was not the encore. It was like three songs in. Four songs in. And the entire speaker system is, there's a fire and it's blown out. And now they still haven't even announced if fans will get a refund. But they basically waited a little bit to tell everybody that the show would not go on, and everybody had to pile out of there. and then they had to panic to try and fix everything to make sure that there wasn't a missed concert the next night. That is a car wreck.
Sounds like they need a new stadium to me.
Oh, there you go.
Right?
Kind of like the year that they canceled the preseason game because of the turf in the dome.
There are some conspiracies out there about fires, like that they start fires, the government does, so they can build things where the fire sites were. Could this have been Cal and Hannah McNair starting a fire at NRG so they could build a new stadium? Cash in or trash in?
Never quit.
I just want to win.
Barbecuing.
It's always fun to win.
I didn't know that that was a power box.
Was that Cal that said it's always fun to win? That was Cal.
It's always fun to win.
Yeah, it's Cal.
I did that accidentally. I stumbled into that. Yeah, look, this is a way to get a new stadium. Start a fire.
Call.
We need the arsonist over there to investigate this thing. I'm going to nominate the NIT. We had a texter actually sent this in just now, too. The NIT invited South Alabama to the NIT, and then they realized that a team didn't make the tournament that they wanted to invite instead, and they rescinded their offer to South Alabama.
Yeah.
They invited them. They said, nope, never mind. I think they're the Jaguars. They're not going to the NIT. Dan Gavitt, who runs the NIT, after the NIT bracket was released Sunday, it was brought to the NIT's attention that one of the teams scheduled to participate had also committed to a non-NCAA-affiliated postseason event. In an effort to secure another participating team, the NIT prematurely extended an invite to South Alabama prior to learning that the original team chose to accept its invite to the NIT. Regrettably, the NIT rescinded its invitation to South Alabama. Blah, 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 blah. They invited them and took
that
it back.
That is so dirty. And if you didn't even set that up when you invited South Alabama to start with, then you need to have a play-in game between those two teams to solve this so that no one gets screwed, because that is awful.
Yeah. So the uninvited team was UC Riverside, and they had accepted a bid to the CBI because the NIT had not communicated with them at all in the lead-up, and so they thought they weren't being invited, and then they end up getting into the NIT and bowing out of the CBI. But, yeah, what a cluster.
Really, it's a blessing, though. It's kind of a blessing, though, to South Alabama. You know, the good news is they don't have to play in the NIT. They don't have to play in the NIT. Also will dominate North Carolina because of their corrupt AD that's also the tournament chair. All right, Brian, what do you have?
Yeah, that was mine.
Oh, my bad.
He took two. Someone said I'm going to nominate Jeremy Branham for being a thief.
For what?
For being a thief.
That's twice I stole something today. Because I stole Lance and John's
song.
All systems go. Yeah. They won't mind, though, right?
Lance won't.
They don't care.
Just throw this crap out there to get clicks.
John lives in California. Is he in California this week? He'll never hear about it. If he's in California, I think I'm good.
If he's
in Houston, I might be.
John will know.
John doesn't read the text line.
No, they just like to tell on us.
If he's in California, I think I'm fine. If he's in Houston, I might not have a job by Wednesday. So.
Well, then you'll become.
T&Ps for me. Josh from Seabrook says the Dallas Mavericks, Journey concert, another texter, South Alabama, another texter. And West Virginia, Indiana, Boise, all robbed. Once a weasel, always a weasel, Bangers.
Right, so
all right, what's winning?
I think that NIT.
NIT. Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Congratulations, NIT. You win something. You win a second-rate tournament. Congratulations. All right, does it for us. Thanks to Brian for the hard work. Thanks to Raul for the delicious food. Thanks to Kobos for hanging out. Oh, yeah, John was at Kobos Museum. That's right.
That's right.
He's blank. I'm dead. He's blank. I'm Brad.
He's blank. He's dead.
I hope to talk to you tomorrow. It is the Bees on ESPN 975. Boss in the Gloss right now.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.